What are you drawing?
A liger.
What's a liger?
It's my favorite animal. It's like a lion and a tiger mixed.
But why are you so sweaty?
I've been practicing some dance moves. Is Trisha here? Who's that in my driveway? It's my ride.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy.
Are you serious? Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
Welcome in. Main feed
exclusively this week as a little bonus treat. No, we're not talking Napoleon, but we kind of are because we're talking Napoleon Dynamite. If you wanted to hear our Napoleon episode, though, it's in the VIP. So just become a VIP and listen to us talk Ridley Scott's Napoleon this week. So it's double Napoleon at Mad About Movies this week. Welcome in. Kent here, joined by Brian and Richard. Fellas, rounding out the year of 2023, just had the Globes, just had the Emmys. Any big takeaways there before we dive into our throwback of the week?
Had no idea the Emmys were happening until like 20 minutes before they started. I was like, do y'all know that there's football games on, like playoff football games on? I don't know when they switched to Mondays, but it was news to me, and maybe I've said that for the last 5 years. I don't know, but I did not partake in much of the Emmys other than whatever popped up on TikTok, if I'm being honest. I used to really like the Emmys. I don't know why it's dissipated over the last couple years.
The Emmys, totally. And it's like they're the most well-positioned to be the number one. They could come for the Oscars because like TV is now, you know, so much of the cultural and not just zeitgeisty stuff, but like is thought of so highly as where the real art is happening. So the Emmys would be the best position. I mean, I always think like a better version of the Globes is like the most positioned award show that like combines everything. Mm-hmm. We've always talked about the content awards, but yeah, the Emmys, but it seems like the more they're more positioned, the less relevant they feel. I was confused too. I knew it was coming a couple days out, but I was confused. I kept seeing people winning like Creative Arts Emmys like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Same. I saw like John Mulaney won for, and I was like, well, that's so random. They do those in January and the Emmys are in September. Like, and then I didn't think about, and then once they're like, oh, the Emmys are this week, I was like, oh yeah, the strike. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. But
yeah, it threw me off.
I didn't watch it. I was in football mode, playoffs mode, but Kent was talking about too. I mean, it's counter programmed a bit, but like, I just don't think you can counter program playoff football. I know it's not for everyone. I just mean like in terms of eyeballs. It's a lot of eyeballs.
Well, yeah. In terms of why was it on against football, and if you're Fox, you want something that can compete at least somewhat with football. So I guess that was their best take. I don't know if it had it. They were even thinking about football.
Is it expensive for the Emmys? Like, don't you want to like sell ads on it?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But at the same, I mean, there's different strategies here. I mean, you can you can literally try to do the opposite of what your network compadres do, or you could say, screw them, we're just going to do our own thing, which, I mean, networks take either side, depending on what the event is and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's a little bit of both. Honestly, it might not even have thought about it. It might have just been that dumb. Just been like, let's just do it on Monday. And like, oh my God, there's a Monday night playoff game, you know, just completely caught them by surprise, which is totally possible. I did catch a little bit of it. The wife wanted to watch some, so we caught some of it. I will say, impeccably produced broadcast.
Yeah. From what I saw, it was really well done too. Yeah.
One of the better award show broadcasts I've seen in terms of like the sets and I don't know, the transitions to guests and all that was all very smooth. They did this bit this year where they had old sitcom sets. They just set up on the stage because they're all three panel sets anyway, you know? So they just set up these three panel sets and then have people from those sitcoms kind of introduce the categories. So for best comedy show, they had the Cheers bar there and they had Ted Danson at the Cheers bar, right? And then they did drama. They had the Sopranos therapist's office, right? So it was really, really cool idea. And they had Anthony Anderson kind of in the sets, kind of giving context and doing bits and stuff. Anthony Anderson did a really solid job as well. Yeah. I was like, why is he on a Fox thing? And then he's doing this game show, I guess. So I was like, okay. That's why they're promoting. Like, normally he's a procedural guy on like CBS or ABC, doing, SVU or something like that. So cool to see that. But yeah, no real huge takeaways other than the bear absolutely sweeping, like we kind of predicted on our Iron Claw. Jeremy Allen White's just going to keep racking up the awards.
The funniest thing about that, though, is like the number of people tweeting the series that is winning everything for best drama is way funnier than the series that's winning everything for best comedy. Because
that's fair.
The bear. I couldn't believe The Bear was in comedy. Yeah. I was like, this is not a...
The most stressful show on TV.
Dark comedy, maybe, like, but if you had it in drama, I'd be like, okay. Whereas I think Succession is hilarious, and it's always a drama.
The best parts of Succession is the humor. Like, it's not... I know. It's like, you can sell me on The Bear being a comedy, but you have to say Succession is a comedy. I think what they mean by that is just 30 minutes versus an hour. 100%. They need to just do that instead of these arbitrary... Right. If it's under an hour, it's a comedy, because it's not necessarily the case anymore.
Yeah.
Was that for, because I know these were delayed, right? Because of the, a lot of these shows that were, like that Jon Stewart show was nominated, hasn't been on in like a year. Was that for season one or two of The Bear?
I think it was season two.
Okay. I think. Cool.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
And the last season, it was for the last season of Succession as well?
Yes.
Yeah, correct. So. And it's kind of indicative of who won the awards on kind of. Spoilers for Succession if you watch the Emmys, right? Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. But
because we have Emmys again now in like 6 months, because they'll be back in September. So
Exactly. And great to see Io win, because, it's the year of Io. So give her an award, because I doubt she'll be up for an Oscar, even though she was in a ton of stuff this year. Just, blessed our souls every few weeks when she pop up in something.
She's
the best. Anyway, that's my big takeaways. Other than it was just an impeccably produced award show, which usually I can come on here and roast, my God, this is cringe. The only cringy thing they had was they had his mom in the audience.
John Oliver made a good bit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Did you hear Mulaney do your exact joke about Bradley Cooper's conducting?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And when he did the governor's
ball?
Yeah.
Gosh. All that stuff.
Shout out John Mulaney, because we know you listen. But it was pretty much word
for
word
what you said in the show. Two of the great comic voices of our time, me and John Mulaney, two Irish comic legends.
Well, it was really good, but I'm going to ask you guys one thing before we do Napoleon Dynamite to tease the Napoleon episode and the VIP.
Mm-hmm.
One word from each of you to describe Napoleon from Ridley Scott.
Mm.
Just one word to tease. Richard?
Hilarious.
Oh, Brian?
Lazy.
Nice.
I'm going to go with Ridley.
What if we had just done
There's a tease.
Ridley, Joaquin, and tune in on the
Vanessa.
VIPs.
Yeah.
Napoleon.
Like, what's the most vague thing I can say?
Yeah. French.
Yeah, France.
Maybe that should be how we do reviews. We just do one word at a time, and then we go like,
"Oh, that's a genius idea for a pod."
Okay. Yeah,
we one do word that. Movie reviews. We come on, each say a word, and get out. We'd be way more success with that than this.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to build on it like the improv game. Like Brian's like thought, and Ken's like Napoleon, and I'm like was Brian.
Is dog crap one word or two words? I can't remember. Sorry, just roll fast.
Well, I'll say best picture. That's two words. Mm. So that'll be my tease.
There are some frames in it, which are picture.
They are. It's a picture. Mm-hmm. It's a picture. Well, the throwback conversation, which we do every week in the VIP, but this week for everybody, is Napoleon Dynamite. The VIPs voted on this.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, and here it is. This one's right in the prime of Kent Garrison's high school adolescence. I mean, don't know why they wanted to hear me talk about those days, because I don't want to even talk about them, but here we are.
Job cuts.
I'll throw it to you, Richard. 2004.
Yep.
You're going into senior year. This comes out.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts?
Okay. So I was, this one is a fun one to talk about a bit. I was very into comedy at that time in my life. And I was very into filmmakers, and I was very into kind of indie, starting to get into more kind of indie cinema, and went and saw it with a big group. You might have been in that big group, Kent, at least at one of the screenings. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting time in my life. I remember it vividly of sitting there with something, and an entire room of people is laughing, and I don't understand this movie. I don't like this movie. I've tried to like this movie 100 times. It is lost. Napoleon Dynamite is lost on me. So it was like in the moment I go, I hate this. And then years have passed and I've watched it 10 more times and I understand the value of it now. I intellectually understand like what it means to people. The aesthetic of it was certainly ahead of its time and it kind of became a whole look. But yeah, the humor of it is just, whatever. We've talked about things that are Richard humor before, and I'm not saying that those are better than this because this is all subjective, but if you want to think what is not Richard humor, it is this movie. I don't get it.
Brian, what were you doing in 04?
This would have been, I think would have been going into my senior year of college, thereabouts. Like especially, it did not take a lot to be, like a high level film aficionado in Searcy, Arkansas. But I knew about almost every movie before most of my peer group and friends did. And this was one of those that I don't remember seeing the trailer for it. I wasn't following like movie news at this time because this was a huge hit at Sundance. And part of the reason why we're doing that this week is because they're doing a 20th anniversary screening of this at Sundance this week. So it's kind of it's a full circle thing because it started there. And then Fox Searchlight got it. Anyway, but this was one that that people over the summer, people came back after, I think I was in Searcy for that summer. I believe that was the summer that I worked in Searcy, Arkansas. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a bustling metropolis where I went to college. I worked in town and stayed that summer, and a lot of my friends came back from summer break for the semester and were talking about this movie because they had seen it in their larger cities that actually exist, and Searcy does not. And I was like, what are you even talking about? And somebody dragged us to see it when it finally got to Searcy, or probably to Little Rock, I would guess. Somebody dragged us to see it, and I had a probably 20 or 30 minutes of being in the Richard camp of everybody's kind of laughing. And I'm like, what are we doing here? I don't get this. And then the weird, quirky, oddball, stupid humor of the movie started to kind of win me over. And I came to a place where I really liked it. And I there may not be a movie in my life that I have, especially a comedy, that I've gone back and forth with, like I have this movie. Because I too, Richard, I appreciate its place. And I've gone from, that's a really funny movie that I liked a lot, to at some point I watched it, however many years ago, I was like, this is what I feared, that it's not funny. And I'm, it was of a time and that time is over. And then this time, that's part of why I didn't put it on the schedule to begin with. I let the VIPs vote on it. And this was the overwhelming favorite of, we got to do an episode on this. But yeah, rewatching it this time, I enjoyed it again. So I don't know. It's a very strange movie. It's kind of hard to, if you're like Richard, and you're like, if you're saying this is the worst movie I've ever seen, which is a thing I've heard people say, really? I kind of get it. Like, I understand why, because there's not any substance to it. Most of the jokes are weird physical comedy or just mannerisms and stuff. It's very, very odd, but not quite odd enough to be considered Andy Kaufman or something, some real weird humor, some 80s Letterman kind of stuff. It's a very odd film, and it's very easy to understand why people don't like it. if it works for you, it works for you. And this time around, at least, I felt like, yeah, it hit the mark for me. Anyway, Kent, what about you?
Nice.
Yeah, this came out. I was working at a water park this summer. Remember that? So it was NRHCO a very wait. Yes, it was.
Okay.
I was lifeguarding. But man, I cannot be more opposite than you guys on this one. I have always loved this movie.
Nice.
From the first time I saw it, I've always thought it was super original, super funny. I mean, I've probably seen this one, I don't know, ton of times. Mm. I'm with you. The culture of it, the quotability of it, the Vote for Pedro t-shirts, all of it that kind of stemmed from this movie during that time was an absolute beating.
Yeah.
You know, the Jamiroquai Renaissance, all everything. John Heater having a career after this. Everything, you know, like the ripple effect of this movie, and we'll talk more about that later, was significant. And so I can understand if you didn't think this was a good movie, that the entire experience and culture around of it would just make you hate it even more, you know, if you didn't, if you didn't get it. Yeah. So this is one of the more annoying movies culturally, I think, that's kind of been a success. And there's been a lot of annoying ones. Come out of Sundance, you know, but this one, you know, has this very distinct quality to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think that's for the better. In my opinion, this is just a great example of, you know, writing, directing, production design, and oddly cinematography kind of all playing off each other in a really unique way. I mean, I can't, the only person that comes to mind that was doing anything close to this was Wes Anderson at that time. But this is just so much different with its humor than anything Wes Anderson did. Yeah, I think it's probably aesthetically inspired by that, and tonally maybe to a certain extent by just the oddballness of it and the like, kind of counterculture aspect of it. But I mean, it's such a unique thing. I mean, every aspect of this is so unique. Like, I mean, like, you can't think of anyone else than Uncle Rico or John Grice as Uncle Rico, right? Or Kip. Or in John Heater, for as much crap as, you know, I just gave him or whatever, have given him in the past, like, this is, Napoleon is him, right? I watched a little, you know, B-roll behind the scenes of Jared Hess directing this, and credit to Jared Hess, because on honestly, every setup, he's just telling them exactly what to do. You know, he's like, walk like this, you know, fight like this, do this. So it seems like from the very outset, Jared Hess's vision was extremely clear for what he wanted this to be. But how do you guys feel about John Heater and the role of Napoleon Dynamite and what that is and what he brings to that? Because I think it's just super, I can't picture anyone else playing that role. I mean, it's almost impossible to think about anyone else. I mean, it had to be him. And how do you find an
Jake
unknown?
Jake Gyllenhaal, because that was a producer note. That they should get
what
Jake Gyllenhaal to play Napoleon.
Good God,
only if he does it like Nightcrawler, though.
Jeez, man.
Like, can you get Hilary Duff? No, but we'll get Haley Duff. We'll compromise there.
Right.
Thank God. That's my Duff.
It's funnier that like this movie probably culturally is gonna be way more relevant than anything Hilary Duff did in cinema, which is really funny that Haley Duff has like the Library of Congress, maybe worthy film in her oeuvre. Anyway, John Heater. I mean, where do you find this guy? You know, I mean, how do you
BYU,
write this movie?
That's the only place you find somebody like this. Yeah.
So okay, so they met at BYU. They were college friends or something. Were, okay.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. Like, how do you write this movie and not know this guy ahead of time? Or how do you write this part for without knowing him? I mean, just
Right.
Expand.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it is a lot of the events of the movie are based on Jared Hess's life growing up in whatever it is, North Preston, Idaho. The character is really a lot based on John Heater, just his vibe and his appearance and stuff. I think probably even when I'm at my lowest on this movie, I do think this is sort of a weirdly iconic character from this era of movies.
For sure.
Too. And Heater is, it's absolutely true. Heater is the perfect person to play this character because he just sort of embodies, it's like a caricature of him, I feel like. And also it's very clear, I think, why he hasn't really had all that much of a career. Like, this is a very specific, weird tone and character to play, and it doesn't translate to Blades of Glory and the Benchwarmers or anything else. I mean, he's done some voice work, and good for him, he's made some money off of it. He seems like he has a really good he's accepting of where he's at with everything. But even in the moment, you're not watching I'm not watching Napoleon Dynamite and being like, this guy is going to be a comedy icon for the next 15 years. You know, it's just like, this character is iconic. That's probably it for John Heater moving forward. And that's mostly true, I think, to this
point. Yeah, the fact that he even has another movie, Blades of Glory, that's somewhat relevant is actually awesome. I mean, really impressive that he was able to work this into something other than... And Efren Ramirez had, you know, a few parts after this too. So, you know, they both kind of had a little something come out of this. Man, Diedrich Bader, Rex Kwando. Where are we on Diedrich Bader? Don't talk enough Diedrich Bader on the show. I feel like he's right on the tier of American Treasure, O'Malley territory.
Yeah, he seems like a great hang. Did his whole thing in one day. So
all did he really?
One day shoot, yeah.
Man, the freaking commercial is so funny. Yeah. Kip watching that, just being so inspired. The whole, you forget how many bits there are in this movie when it comes to, you know, I mean, sequences. I mean, there's just there's so many. I always think about the prom sequence is like at the end where he's like, you know, I like your sleeves, that whole thing. But that's like not even halfway through, maybe. They have the entire vote for Pedro stuff after that. My favorite subplot is Uncle Rico selling the Tupperware, though. What's your favorite, Brian?
Uncle Rico's whole thing is really funny to me because it's just that a lot of what happens here, like, I understand that it is semi-autobiographical to Jared Hess. This was not like a lot of my upbringing, but everybody knows an Uncle Rico or 10, you know, who is convinced that if the coach just hadn't screwed him over, that he would be in the NFL or the NBA or whatever else. And I think Uncle Rico's whole deal is really funny. The throwing the steak is so stupid, but got a laugh out of me this time. And it's probably the 10th time I've seen this movie, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of like little bits that I think are really, but Uncle Rico's probably my favorite just overall. Plus, I love the dance scene at the end. It's so stupid, and I feel dumb laughing at it every time, but it works for me. It's such a funny way to end this very strange movie.
I always laugh when he comes out of his room just drenched in sweat and just sloshes the Gatorade back in front of LaFonda. That's a... Mm-hmm. The glamour shots stuff with Deb, I find very funny. Deb's whole character, I find very funny because of we did make affinity of those at scout camp. There's a lot of very specific nostalgia targeting our demographic during this too. I mean, the Pegs, Shock's Pegs. I mean, that was, of course, the coolest kid on the block had the Pegs. I always wanted Pegs. Never got Pegs. Always, we're always building ramps and stuff. We're always wanting nunchucks.
Yeah, always messaging me about Peg stuff.
Pegs and Pogs. Yeah. That's Kent's big thing.
Pegs and Pogs. Mm-hmm. It's my other podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What would you say is the thesis of this movie? Because I think there's kind of a less is more quality to it in this simple living lifestyle kind of thing. I don't know. You just watch this film and you feel like you're in this bubble of society that doesn't really exist in anywhere else. It's got a very painterly feel to it. And I don't know. What would you say like is the point of this though, Brian? Is there one?
No, not really. I mean, it's I got a little bit of both sides on this. Like, I think that it is actually a fair criticism of the movie. Is like, what is it? You know, what's the point? What's it saying? Then the flip side of that is like, I don't know that every movie has to have a big overarching point that it's trying to make. I think sometimes movies can, especially movies made for $400,000 like this, sometimes movies can just be stupid, strange entertainment. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of nostalgia to it. I don't know what this movie's legacy is in terms of how it impacts the, you know, the next decade or half decade of comedy or indie filmmaking or whatever. But there are a fair few. I think one of the things that's fun, you mentioned the setting. You get a few movies right after this, like Little Miss Sunshine, Sunshine Cleaning, some others like that that are sort of very small, low budget comedies that are also set in small towns and things like that. And I don't know if that's a direct result of Napoleon or not, but yeah, I mean, I just think that it's just, it exists to be a kind of quirky entertainment and maybe for Jared Hess to tell a tiny story about small town living and how different things are in a place like Preston, Idaho versus LA or New York or whatever else. Like I like the opening sequence with the plates and the hands and stuff like that, that was all added late, like when the movie was done, because all of these executives, one of the big things that was coming out of test screenings were people liking the movie but being like, I don't understand when this takes place. Is it is it 2004 or is it 1989? Like I don't know. He's got the internet, but like everything else just feels so antiquated. A lot of that is deliberate, but part of it, I think, is just kind of Hess being like, yeah, because like this is Idaho. Like it's different right now. Yeah. Like it's not just Idaho, it's small town Idaho. Right. You know?
And its influence to me was more so outside of comedy or film, like that kind of lo-fi, you know, growing a mustache, only a third ironically aesthetic. I mean, you still see that to this day, 20 years later. Like that very was the hipster, first time that really was mainstream. Like that kind of dazed and confused with this kind of hint of small irony, but not really, just kind of being comfortable in your goofiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Became huge. I mean, that was to me its biggest influence on like the culture, was like you started seeing like Napoleon Dynamite looking dudes all the time. And still do. It didn't really go away.
That's true. Yeah.
It's definitely true. You know, what I was teasing earlier in terms of the impact of this, I am actually surprised that there weren't a ton of clones of this movie. With how successful this was, you would have thought the next decade would have been Napoleon Dynamite ripoffs.
Right.
But the only ones that were other Jared Hess. Yeah. It would have been other Jared Hess movies like Nacho Libre and, you know, his other Gentleman Broncos. Have you seen that one with
that one.
Sam Rockwell?
Terrible.
Yeah. It's actually kind of amazing that Hollywood kind of left this one alone and didn't try to find the next quirky comedies and make them into memes and, you know, kind of early stages of that.
There's a note on that on the Wikipedia for this, of all things, of the what they call the Napoleon Dynamite problem, which is like basically how do you figure out which quirky movies, which quirky scripts are going to land with audiences and which ones aren't? And this is such a, because you're right,
that's
like you would think that there would have been like a plethora of Napoleon knockoffs, and there probably are some that we don't remember because they were bad knockoffs, you know, but I think that even in the moment there was this kind of understanding of like this probably
was the one with Michael Cera, Youth and Revolt, wasn't that kind of a Napoleon
totally. I mean, I don't really remember that movie. I mean, I remember the title and that's about it, but like on Wikipedia references Lost in Translation and I Heart Huckabees as having similar kind of weird, quirky movies, where Lost in Translation obviously was very successful. Mm-hmm. I Heart Huckabees was not. This is wildly successful given the budget and everything, and it's cult standing and whatnot. But it's really hard to predict which of these kind of off kilter, quirky kind of movies, which script is going to land and which one isn't. That's the deal. And mm-hmm. so I think there's, yeah. there was kind of this sense of like, even in the moment, again, like this is probably irreparable.
Whiting in a bottle. Yeah.
We can't come. I mean, even
that's admirable.
Yeah. I mean, like even this, like when I was looking at the, I was trying to think before I started doing the research, I was like, what? At least for me, I always think we talk about this every time. Every throwback episode is going to be like, what's your background? Do you remember seeing this for the first time? Things like that. And I try to think of that before I go do all the research and everything and kind of, all right, put myself back into whatever, wherever it was that we were, that I watched this movie for the first time. And what I said at the outset, I think bears out in the box office of feeling like I have no idea what this movie even is. And then getting to it late after so many people have seen it, this thing peaked at number 8 with $2.2 million in its 15th week of release. So it did this like, I mean, this, as much as I hate limited release, this is like one of the real yeah. successes yes. of limited release. It goes from 30 theaters to 40 theaters to 70 theaters. And I think it peaked at around 1,000 theaters, never made $3 million in a week at the box office, wow. but it was in the charts for half a year, basically mm-hmm. with all it being is, yeah, a few ads here and there, but like more than anything else, just your friends in their dorm or whatever being like, hey, have you seen Napoleon Dynamite? And you're like, no, what is it? And like, you just, we got to go see it. And that's what we're going to do this weekend. Yep. Is go see Napoleon Dynamite. It's, I don't know how you could do that again. You know, that's just, that really is a lightning in the bottle yeah. situation.
Everything about it. I mean, the Vote for Pedro shirts were everywhere. Yeah, and sure. not only that, I mean, every shirt and outfit Napoleon wears in the movie, you wears everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like the Screaming Wolf t-shirts and all that yeah, stuff was yeah. all because, you know, out of this. Oh, and yeah. you talk about influence. I mean, I think this movie has a huge influence on music. Mm-hmm. When you think about this lo-fi kind of bossa nova, vintage record kind of feeling music that's just super popular right now on Spotify and SoundCloud and all that type of stuff. I mean, this is got to be their Dark Side of the Moon, right? Something like that. The soundtrack. I use this music in videos a ton back in the day.
It is kind of an aesthetic revolution in a funny way.
Yeah.
Such a mild-mannered movie, but like it is, I think, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it is certainly the best thing I can say about it, someone who doesn't enjoy it as a narrative, but I can say stylistically, it's certainly like, we talk about this all the time, like how crap culture was, just kind of aesthetically, you know, mm-hmm. films, television mm-hmm. stuff, because we talked about it a bunch, right? We started to use digital, but the digital wasn't very good yet, so everything just looked crap. And this is kind of in response to that. It's this, like you said, Ken, it's this kind of lo-fi, vinyl-y feeling mm-hmm. movie.
Right.
Jack White does the opening, you know. Yeah, it's got this feel to it.
Yeah, it fits in with all of that stuff that was happening at other points of culture in this kind of family-friendly, but in somewhat subversive way. Like, the movie is kind of subversive of whatever pop culture is. It's certainly not like, I mean, it's a PG movie, but it's subversive of that. And so it's certainly, I think, its legacy to me is really kicking off or at least mainstreaming a certain kind of nerdcore, you know, it should be very proud of that. I mean, that's a real thing. Wish it was better as a film to me. This movie, it's quintessential. We've talked about these two. I wish I liked it more.
Sure.
Which is a compliment. It's not.
Sure. Oh yeah. It's super specific, like tone and style and sense of humor. And if you're not in on that, I can totally get it. Totally understand it. But something about it, I don't know. It just makes me laugh. Yeah. Something about Napoleon, something about the characters, something about, I don't know, the dialogue. I don't know what it is, but like I said, I think it's everything put together. It's just kind of like, it is. It's a great example of everything working and filming and screening it at the right time at Sundance for the right person who probably was in the right audience that got it and said, you know what? This might have something, and we'll put it out in a few cities and see if it does. And we don't know why this is good, but it, you know, people definitely took a chance on this because it's not, Brian, to your point, it's definitely not what you get every year from every screenwriter or every comedic filmmaker.
Right.
And I think that should be definitely admired. Where do you think this holds a place, though, in culture cinematically. We know pop culture wise, but do you think this is good enough to be like a Criterion / Library of Congress inductee type movie? Like, does it define American culture during this time? Like, is it one of the movies that we'll think about? Brian,
I don't know. So. It really does occupy a strange space. Like I said,
kind of
this
exists outside reality in a way too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I said this in the Discord, but like we watched this with on Sunday night. We got some friends together, some of Coop's buddies, and we watched it with the kids so they could see it for the first time. And my feeling on that was like,
what'd they think? Yeah.
The second it ended, Cooper was like, "That's the weirdest movie I've ever seen in my life." I was like, "Yeah." It's odd. It's very odd, and you know, complete. But he enjoyed it. He laughed. Like, he loves physical comedy because he's Dan. You know. So there was a lot of stuff that he liked, but there was a lot of stuff where I could tell he was like, "What's happening right now?" He just couldn't quite. But it was, you know, that was fun. But what I said in the Discord was like, it's a movie that like I don't even care if he likes this movie, but it does feel like one that he's got to see at some point, and I want to watch it with him. You know, I don't want him to find this in college or something. I want to experience, does he like this or not? Does he think this is fun? But it is hard to kind of justify as like a, like quality wise. I don't know. I'm curious. I guess the real question would be for anyone who is outside our age group, or are, you know, part of this generation or whatever. If you're 25, 28 right now, or you're 55 or something, like, do you care about this movie at all? Or is it just a full-on, is it exclusive to our generation and then our kids that Kent's kids will watch this movie because Kent loved this movie, you know? Does it go beyond that? And I don't know.
It's
hard to make an argument for or against it for me personally.
Well, I will say, shout out to my mom, because my mom loves this movie, and her and I always quote it and joke about it. The "your mom goes to college" is always our joke to each other. But so, I mean, she's my mom. So I think the older generation gets it because it is, I think, playing off that 70s nerd vibe a little bit. Especially when he gets the leisure suit and goes to the dance and all that. I mean, she says she knew a ton of nerds like that when she was growing up. So I think they can relate to that aspect. But that's a good question. I mean, would Martin Scorsese like this movie if he just sat down and screened it? You know, like what
Jonathan
would the
Demme did, for what it's worth. This is really one of Jonathan Demme's favorite movies, which is kind of a funny.
Yeah, like what is a person who like just loves movies but isn't really into this, like what would they think of it? Because that's the real test because we did grow up in the whole wave of the craze.
I do think Richard's point about the culture on just how bad culture was at this point and where we were at and then kind of the lo-fi thing where it goes from there. That to me may have as much to do with its potential, you know, Library of Congress kind of status as anything else that the movie is actually doing. Cause I hadn't thought about that, but it is true. This was in some ways, this is not weird enough to me. Because like, I think Wes Anderson, now we're so used to it. It is what it is. Wes Anderson is such a weird aesthetic filmmaker. The movie's not like, it is subversive, but it's not controversially subversive, you know? And so it kind of misses on that. It's not like something like Michelle Gondry would make or anything like that. It's a weirdness that is just sort of offbeat and not quite as, there's probably a term I'm trying to find, but regardless, I'm not sure where it hits the mark on all those things, the way that some of those other weird filmmakers get with their movies and how their movies play out and stuff like that. But culturally, is just as far as like where we were in 2004 and where we have come since. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I think this has a play in some of that stuff, maybe even more so than it directly in a style of comedy or film, the way, I don't know, Anchorman was at this same year, you know, or whatever else.
2004 in comedy, some of the other ones, Dodgeball, which we just talked about, the VIP. Coens did Lady Killers that year.
I think we all agree the best Coens.
We had 51st Dates, Garden State, Sideways. This is probably the best one by far is Shaun of the Dead. And then, I mean, a couple more. Shoot. Life Aquatic, Anchorman, Napoleon Dynamite.
Anchorman's that year, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's Team America, Harold and Kumar. I mean, that's pretty much it. So it wasn't exactly a stack
year. Anchorman is always so much earlier than it actually was.
Mm.
I would have always guessed it was like my freshman year of high school or something, but it's way
later. Yeah. 2004. So yeah, I mean, this one definitely holds a place in my heart, not only from then, but you know, I've definitely watched it with friends and family over the years, kind of stopped down on it every now and then, depending on what scene it is, that kind of thing. But certainly a very unique movie and a polarizing one. Mm. I mean, you're right. Sure. If you're either in or you're out on this one, and it's not really, you know, anywhere in between. And I think really the point of the movie is just, it's probably the log line, which is, or the tagline, which is just, he's out to prove that he's got nothing to prove. So you're probably right, Brian. There is no point. That's the point. All right. I'm going to grade this one out. I'm going to go a solid A, middle A. What about you, Brian?
I will go B+. B+. Richard, what about you?
I'll go solid middle C.
Fair.
That's good. My favorite note on the piano.
Spread like that. That's fun.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. That's Napoleon Dynamite. Oh, they did do a animated series of this for a few episodes. It was like if you're into or something, yeah. If you're into this movie, go seek out the animated series because it was really funny. And I think they only did 6 episodes or something, but it was like all the original cast, everything, exact aesthetic, humor, everything, but just animated. So yeah, check that out. You might not know what that happened, 2012, but it did. All right. That's Napoleon Dynamite. Check out Napoleon Ridley Scott talk on the VIP feed this week. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP gets you at least another episode a week talking about movies from the past that are probably celebrating an anniversary. We're also doing a retrospective this year that we're really excited about, talking Quentin Tarantino. So join us. We haven't even started yet. You still got time. Sign up, join us, watch every Tarantino movie in order with us this year. We're talking about them all. It's going to be really fun. So MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP. Get you over there and helps ensure that we keep making podcasts. All right. We'll see you over there. Until next time, get the cinema.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Again, scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah yah. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.